Hey, hey, Jesse.
Hey, hey, Corey.
How you doing?
Good.
Question. Would you rather have skin that changes colors?
Yes. Absolutely. Oh, man. That'd be the greatest gift ever.
Okay, well, this is not the end of the question, but what color would you change it to?
Depends on where I am, what I'm doing.
That's a good point. Context is everything.
Yes.
You have skin that changes color based on your emotion. So if
you, oh, no.
if you think about, like, you know, green, jealousy, red, anger.
Yeah, I'm a pretty emotional person.
So everything has its own, like, shade, okay?
Yeah, like a mood ring.
Yeah, you're like a walking mood
ring. No. Okay.
Or tattoos on your body that every day revealed what you did the day before.
Like Illustrated Man?
Yeah, like you were it was illustrated on your body, the story of what you did the day before.
Well, being a fan of Ray Bradbury and Illustrated Man, I guess the human mood ring, because I don't want everybody to know what I did the day before. It may be embarrassing.
Yeah, I would think there'd be easier ways to hide that, though, is why I would probably go in that direction.
Really?
If we assume that these tattoos are invisible places like your arms and not just like the butterfly tattoo I have on my lower back.
I can learn to control my emotions, you know, to where I may be able to dampen how they were revealed.
You think you could suppress?
Yes.
Oh, so you think you could trick your body into something else?
I do it all the time.
Do you think you could project a different color when you're feeling something else?
Perhaps.
So you think you could beat the system?
Yes. Mm. But with the tattoos like that, I'm like, no. That's just going to be just like evidence. Like, yep, you really did go to that place last night. Like, no.
All right, well, everybody, welcome to yet another. We're still doing this. Yet another episode of Two Americas.
So exciting. I'm so excited.
I am Corey Nolan, one of your hosts, and over here is
I am Jesse.
In one of his weird voices.
Yes.
We are happy to continue this conversation and happy that you and many of you at this point, it's been very encouraging to see how many people are tuned into this. I even received, if he's listening, he's probably never going to write me again after this, but an old high school friend wrote me that I don't talk to very much, and he was...
Did he sign your yearbook?
I think we were too close for him to have signed my yearbook. You know, like, that would have been like...
Too, like, yeah.
Yeah, we were too cool. Mm-hmm. You know, yearbook was more for, like, the girls that you wanted to sign. And
I didn't let any girl sign my yearbook.
Really?
Only dudes. That's how hard I was.
Oh, really?
I'm lying.
Did you ever write your name in, like where the pages opened up and said, here, I signed your crack? Did you ever do that?
No, I wasn't that corny. That's pretty corny.
Yeah. I don't remember how I was doing that in high school, but that was a good line for most of elementary school.
I don't even know where my yearbooks are.
Your elementary school? I know where my high school ones are.
My high school, I mean, I would imagine they're at my mom's, but, you know, I don't care, really.
A lot of things that are old, it's good to, like, even like music, like, it's good to go back every once in a while and just sort of get a flavor for it and feel for it. But living in it or staying too saturated in it, like reunion time, like that, if I like a lot of people that I graduate with.
I do.
But
absolutely.
But if you get too much into that, like if your head space is too much into that time frame, that time period, I start getting like some weird stuff starts happening to me, and it kind of gets dark for me.
Okay. I mean, probably me too. But I would like to have my senior yearbook, you know, when they have like all the like most this and did you come in? Did you get a ranking?
Yeah. I was,
what were you?
I was most dependable.
That sounds right.
Yeah. And like my best friend growing up was on the broadcast. Like they handled yearbook for some reason. And he made me hold a packet of adult diapers. Depends.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Yeah.
Wow. Good. What high school did you go to?
I went to Hoover High School. Well, Barry Freer, and then Hoover.
I was most unpredictable.
I could definitely see
that. I wonder why they said that.
Hey, it was good to be recognized, though, for you, though, right?
I mean, you know, I was just being me. I didn't know what was so unpredictable. I knew everything. It was totally predictable to me.
Sitting here in your Pink Floyd shirt and your references to sci-fi and...
Yes, for our listeners at home, I'm wearing a Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon shirt and Keens. A pair of Keens.
Yeah, it's pretty unpredictable.
Yeah.
And your Beats.
Oh, and my white Beats.
Your white Beats. Yeah, I think that you probably have lived up to that. There, whoever was
controlling
your...
That's just me, man. Just doing my thing.
Yeah, well, I feel like I've lived up to mine, too. I feel like I'm pretty dependable.
You are.
Like, you can count on me to have things kind of together.
Organized, and that's right.
Yeah. I feel I was surprised to have been recognized at all in high school because I kind of was in the middle of the pack of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So whoever that was that nominated me, or if we voted, I don't know, people must have seen something in me that I couldn't see in myself. So thanks. Thanks, Hoover High School class of 97.
Wow, that's great. 97?
Yeah.
How many kids did I have by then? I think I had two.
No.
Yeah.
How many years? We're only 10 years apart, right? About that? Or less than 10 years apart.
I had two kids in 1997. Man.
Well, right, because you would have been 27, 28.
I'll tell you here. In eighth grade, that was the first year that I lived here in Alabama. I remember, which was probably the hardest year of my life, just culture shock and having to adjust. But I did make best dressed. In my school.
Again, not surprising.
It's very surprising considering what I'm wearing right now.
Yeah, this is the most dressed down I've ever seen you.
Back then, you know, when you're younger, I guess I'm just growing to be more mature and just more feel at home in my skin. Because, dude, I used to like go to the beach with like a whole outfit on. I used to never like not be dressed.
You would go onto the sand?
Oh, yeah.
In a full outfit?
Like full black outfit.
That you could swim in?
I wasn't trying to swim. I didn't want to be at the beach.
You're just making a statement.
I was just like, why are you people at the beach?
Why were you at the beach?
Because my wife wanted to be at the beach. My wife at the time wanted to be at
so
the
were
beach.
You playing?
I was married young. My first wife and I married young.
So were you there to like play with the kids?
Yeah, I was there to be, you know, but I really didn't want to be there because I don't like the beach. But, you know, that doesn't matter because...
Are you a swimmer?
Yeah, I love to swim.
Oh, yeah, you grew up with a pool. I forgot. Yeah,
I love to swim. I guess...
That's on you, though.
Insecure. Yeah, it was just me being like 23 and being like, I'm too cool to like wear shorts.
But at the same time, incredibly hot, I'm sure.
I wasn't that hot. I was in really good shape, so I didn't even...
I don't mean that hot. I mean literally physically hot because you're wearing all black on the beach.
That's what I'm saying. I was not...
Oh.
I didn't even hardly sweat. I was in such, I had a great,
My
body was in such fine tune with itself that like, yeah, I used to wear like.
Is that how it works? You don't sweat if you're.
I would sweat, but I wasn't like, I'm dying. I just like, it was just like, what? It's my clothes. Jeans and a black t-shirt weren't going to kill me at the beach.
I bet you, what year is this? Late 90s that we're talking about?
Early 90s, yeah.
I bet you were throwing all those white people for a loop. Who is this guy in his tight? We wearing tight black jeans back
I've always
then?
Worn tight jeans. Yeah.
You're probably wearing your wives back then. We said that before, right?
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Out on the beach. But I mean, props to you for even going out there because some dads would just have, you know, a lot of people don't like the beach actually. And they would just sit in the room and watch TV. A lot of.
Really?
Oh, yeah. My dad doesn't like the beach.
See, I learned something.
Yeah.
I thought that was like what all white people did. They love to go to the beach.
We don't really go to the beach. Yeah, I would rather go to the mountains too. My family would. I do like the beach. I think it's
fine now.
I have sensory issues, and so like sand
yes.
and sunscreen and yes. all like
smells.
Yeah,
yeah. It's overwhelming.
It is
like the ocean. I love the way the ocean smells, but like then like there's rotting animals.
Seaweed.
Yeah, and seaweed, and plus too like. When I was younger, the only beach I'd ever really been to was Atlantic City, and it was not the nicest beach back then. And there was lots of jellyfish, and I got stung a couple of times. And yeah, so I don't have fond memories, but as I've gotten older, I've learned to appreciate.
When I go around, especially when I go into like the mid-Atlantic, like when I'm in Virginia, people go to Virginia Beach,
right,
or they'll go
there.
To in North Carolina, they'll go to the Outer Banks, or they'll go to Wilmington. And then on down, you go south, and there's all, you know, there's a lot of places.
Beach towns, yeah. I've been to only been to those places in the winter, oddly enough.
But what I was going to say is that's where all those people in that area, or then you scoot over a little bit to the west. It's not the same kind of beach. Uh-uh. And I consider where we are, I feel like we're in a really good spot because the beaches where
we can
get to in just a few hours are really, they are exceptional. They're really beautiful. And so for that, I think, you know, there is a cultural thing of like everybody just goes to the beach, but it's also because, I mean, it is one of the better, prettier experiences that I think you can have when you're talking about going to the east compared to like the east.
Yeah.
And that has its own stuff. I've not really spent much time on the east coast, so I can't talk about that. I just think we actually have access to some really excellent.
Access being the key word. Well, I've never been to 30A. I don't even know what that's all about. I see all the little stickers. I'm like, who's this for? It's not for me.
I'll tell you a little spot you can go to in 30A. We can't afford to stay in Seaside. We don't go to 30A like that.
I mean,
30A, and sorry, if you're listening to this, and because there are a lot of people who love it down there.
Apparently, everybody has bumper stickers.
It is the Truman Show. It is. When you're down there, you're like, this may not all be real. I'm not sure because everybody looks exactly the same.
I've been there to perform. I've never stayed there.
Oh, there used to be a club down there in Blue Mountain.
This was like outside amphitheater thing that I played.
Oh, in Seaside.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It is the Truman Show.
Literally, it's the Truman Show.
No, it is. I loved it.
Yeah.
I want to stay here.
I mean, it's a bit utopian. Yeah, you have your little post office and you have your record store. There's a record store up there.
Yeah. I could do it for a couple of months. Well, out of the year. Just let me stay there 2 months out of the year.
When everyone starts coming down there and it's just like a mass crowd of the same type. And I kind of have my aversions to like the rich, that culture where it's very carved out. And that's just like, and that's all those communities seem to have that. I get kind of judgmental in those environments. And so my own issues, but I end up not having a good time because I kind of get my own way of having good times. And maybe to some things that you're thinking, like, that's not the best place for me to go either, because I don't feel like I necessarily fit into that.
What, you mean all white people don't have that kind of money to go down there? See, I didn't know.
You have the kind of money to go down there. It's just the values, and it's just aware where you feel comfortable.
That's my point. I guess it's like because I feel uncomfortable kind of everywhere I go because I always feel like I'm being judged and looked at because I probably am because I'm usually the only black person that I was like, well, if they're going to judge and look at me funny, I might as well be in this weird utopian like great place.
Yeah, no, it is. I agree with that.
But yeah, I wouldn't pay that much money to go down there.
But there are places I went to Gulf Shores recently, and I noticed there were more black people there than I've seen at any other beach. So I think
black people do take vacations now. You know, that used to not be, that was a more rare thing. Part of it was cultural. Part of it was just not knowing how they were going to be treated. My family's always taking vacations. Part of it, I mean, definitely was socioeconomic.
Yeah.
You know, so I remember going on vacations, even like my mother and father took us to Gatlinburg, and it was probably in the 80s.
Mm.
And I didn't see one other black person the whole time.
That's
that's
like the Eastern Branson, man. That's like the white.
Branson, Missouri.
Yeah.
Cool.
I've never been there.
I want to go there.
I would probably enjoy the country music.
I would probably, I was going to say, I would probably dork out on it and be like, this is cool to me because I have a wide palette of musical taste, but my family and most of my friends probably hate it.
When you went to Gatlinburg, did you go for Gatlinburg or did you go to the national park?
Oh, yeah, the Smokies. Yeah, yeah.
Well, course, you say of course, but I know a lot of people who have like, you know, they go and either vacation or their family has like a timeshare.
How could you not go there? That's the best part of it.
Well, I there's so many things for people to do that are tourism based. Like,
it wasn't that much though in the 80s. I mean, there was like kind of, I think there might have been Dollywood. I don't even know if that was built yet. And there was a Great Smoky Mountains Park in like Oberg Gatlinburg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was like a little strip of kind of touristy, but like all that Ripley's and all that stuff had mm-hmm. been built.
Yeah.
Not down at that part.
Yeah.
It was all up on the mountain.
Well, and Pigeon Forge is down there too.
Pigeon Forge. That's yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
No, I agree. I mean, I, when I go, which I haven't been in so long, the park is fantastic. Like it's
that's where really, we always go. Really, yeah.
But it is interesting how people, because of the stuff that's around, don't even enter into.
Oh man, that's the best part.
But it is actually the it's the most visited national park too. So I guess enough people are going.
Smokies,
but yeah. It's also free.
Have you ever seen the bears when you were there?
What's that? There's an area that you can get drive around, and it's Cades Cove, I think, is what it's called. And I think we saw some. I think we did see some in there.
Yeah. I think we saw a family of them the last time I went with Rebecca and the kids, but. As a kid myself, this was back still when like they didn't have the garbage cans that, you know, the bears can't mm-hmm. get into. So, I mean, like literally there were like bears that were just kind of walking up to cars.
Yeah.
And people were like feeding them. My dad was like, don't do that.
Your dad is pretty much just like, don't trust anybody.
He was like, white people do crazy stuff. Like they don't value their lives.
All right, well, we are going to continue our conversation on, well, a lot of things that are going on in our world here in the last couple of weeks, and just try to have an open, honest conversation about our feelings and maybe why we project certain stereotypes and on all sides, really, and hope to just be open enough to where we can try to get some clarity on why we continue to perpetuate some racist ideas and sort of assign traits to certain people based on what we see from other certain people that just look like them. So anyway, here's our second part. That kind of brings us back around to the subject for this episode, and I kind of exposed that about myself, and I think back to the mall situation. Mm-hmm. I began to read comments about, well, we should just shut that down. Like, these people are coming in from these other parts of town. These aren't even like Hoover. And it was almost like, it almost felt like,
what?
It almost was like a relief. You know, there's a lot of comments like that. And this might be controversial, but it's almost like it was a relief that it was the type of person that everyone expected it to be. And that meant it fit into this category of like thug, other, like mm-hmm. you said, this is not really our community. So what are we going to do to change the situation to where we can keep that type of thing out? And that's not the only, like there was some break-ins in our immediate,
I was like in our actual neighborhood.
In our actual neighborhood. Yeah. And, you know, there's video of that. And the demographic that most people around here, and I'm not speaking in judgment of other people because that's what I thought too. You know, like that this is, who is this? It's young black males mm-hmm. and opening up doors. That's what it was. Right. It was car
doors. Yeah.
And that, like that ugliness in me that I think that like there's,
I was going to say, don't beat yourself up so much about it though, because I think that same way. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest. Like when I think about crimes like that are committed, I immediately think that it's probably some young black people, which
I mean, I guess there's the part of that we can agree with that, like, okay, well,
but they're not my young black people. You know, that's where it gets dodgy.
What do you mean?
Like you said, they're not from our community.
Oh.
Yeah, they're from those bad communities.
Well, that's how I feel like we have dealt with an unknown. Like, mm-hmm. that's how we've dealt with the people that we don't understand or something that we're not close. Like, Brian Stevenson talks about how proximity, you went to the memorial in Montgomery.
Yeah, I think like the day before shooting.
That'll be another episode too. But he talks about how proximity changes behavior. So being around people and understanding really is like the best thing we can do.
Absolutely.
So a lack of proximity is a lack of understanding. It's where stereotypes begin to really take off. and some presumptions just about certain people. And we can agree that we may both have that, because unfortunately, you know, when you see video footage, and that is maybe in those scenarios, maybe predominantly who shows up in that.
But it's no different than when there are like a bunch of people showed up at the state capitol with guns. I almost immediately think that's a bunch of white people.
Yeah.
Older white people with beards.
Yeah.
You know, and camo jackets.
Well, and yes, to that point. So,
but then a bunch of black people showed up at Stone Mountain this past weekend.
That was
what a bunch. That, you see,
calling all the white people to come, calling all the rednecks to come and fight. Well, yeah. So that's a good point. Also, that we do kind of frame what we don't know as being the negative, or the thing that we're not comfortable with or uninformed on as being the negative, and then we sort of live with our. With what we're more familiar with, that is a negative in more of our own comfort zone. So, like the things that are, not that I'm condone any of the white supremacist stuff, but it is actually something that I'm kind of grew up understanding a little bit more. And so there's a familiarity to it, like because of my proximity to that and to that way of thinking, that it's almost not as much of a mystery, and therefore not. Well, obviously, it's not as much of a threat to me, something like that, because it's more racially driven.
Mm-hmm.
But to something that I'm not around, a demographic that I'm not around, feels, I think, to a lot of people in this area, it just feels really scary and foreign. And
see, I don't understand that, though, because I think that's a choice, because Bessemer is like 7 minutes away, and it is a lot of black people down there in Bessemer. Okay, if you just go right down 150 from Hoover, you can run into, like, it's almost like going into another world down there.
Right.
Because right up 150 over the hill, you're back into, like, Lake Crest and all of these things. So, mm-hmm. you know, blacks and whites have always lived like that in this country. It's just that we segregate ourselves in our communities. So it's really, I guess, an illusion. 7 minutes away, you don't think the people are going to come up to the Galleria?
Right.
You know, that's an illusion. That's a fallacy that we've created, this bubble that we want to feel that these spaces that we're in are safe and less dangerous because we see less other. Mm-hmm. We see less people of color or different religious affiliations. I mean, I've seen white people recoil when they see a young Muslim woman in her hijab just because they probably... What are they thinking? She's a terrorist? I'm like, she's got a purse and she's in the mall just like you. But I've literally seen white people like,
mm-hmm.
which, well, I'm like, wow, it's that intense for you, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so unfamiliar that I think even like well-meaning people, that if you don't have a lot of experiences around that, there's going to be some kind of like look of curiosity and then probably an overcompensation. And then that becomes... like its own like ordeal in itself. That's just like, oh, this person just can't be a normal person around something that's different. Again, I'm not trying to, I want to maintain a relationship with people who are listening that I'm not on some moral high ground. I'm trying to speak for myself and also not out myself as too much of a racist while doing it. But, but I think from people like me, and I have a lot of outside experiences, but in this community, you know, if something is a little bit different, you have kind of a visceral reaction.
The infamous pool incident.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. That doesn't imply that it's a racism. It does imply just a general to the systemic stuff. There's just sort of this underlying bias.
And I hear exactly what you're saying and I agree with you, but I know you're like looking at my face because I'm just like, what I'm thinking is how and why in 2020 are people still having these kinds of thoughts and reactions and to other? I mean, the average person has access to the internet or television. Whether you choose to form bonds and relationships with people who do not look like you is your own personal choice, and I respect that. But for people to like be shocked that they see black people in their neighborhood, mm-hmm. still just, you know, I can't wrap my mind around it. I'm like, okay, you know that there's probably not going to be as many black people in this neighborhood, but when you see a black person, it shouldn't automatically set off an alarm bell to you, but yet somehow it still does for a lot of white people.
Well, and I mean, from the perspective I'm talking about is not an alarm in the sense of like, I'm just trying to make the point that I think people just aren't themselves. Like, it's not necessarily something that's happening that's racist. It's just like this is because it just feels other, like we're saying. And so it feels...
I guess, I hear you, but it's...
That feels racist to you?
No, it doesn't feel racist. It feels confounding.
I can't
understand it. I really can't understand it because, I don't know. Maybe I give human beings and people too much credit. Like, I'm like, just think. If people would just take the time to stop and think, you know, just for a couple of seconds, like, what's really going on here? I think they'll dispel a lot of that fear is in them that comes from what? Ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
And not ignorance just meaning that they have not been enlightened about things that are outside their normal sphere of reference.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sorry. Sometimes I guess I'm like a child in that sense that I'm just like, man, this is not hard.
Yeah.
Like, I've done hard stuff, you know, in my life. Getting along with somebody that's a little different from you, I've never had a problem with that. And I know that that's makes me different.
Well, and again, not to belabor the point, I'm just trying in this incident that we're back and forth talking about and trying to investigate myself in it, I'm just trying to kind of come up with reasons for why the reaction is what it is. So my explanation right now of what I'm talking about, that's the best I can come up with from what I sense in myself, like, and what I think that means for other people, what I hear them communicating.
And it's legit. No, I mean, I'm tracking with you.
I guess, and I think what might complicate the issue and what you get a lot of from white people in a conversation like this is that, and I actually do agree that on the surface, it's not always with an intent of being racist. But as I analyze why someone would think like that, you realize, oh, it's because there's a lot of stuff going on in that not on the surface racist, but there are a lot of racist undertones and reasons for why you think like that, or reasons that society where you live has become a place that those kind of things are other. And that's circling back around to the point. A friend sent me a text. He's been listening to the podcast, but as soon as those other people were identified, friend of mine sent a picture off of
the suspect's
social media that had a group of them like giving the finger to the camera and holding guns or had their hands as guns. It looked pretty, frankly, intimidating, I believe was the intent. Mm-hmm. I believe that's the idea and something like that. But his point was, I think he said, it looks like this is probably who was involved in this. I don't know if he was hearing this from other people, but it was before I ever saw the news on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, unfortunately, this image right here is going to be applied to everyone. This image is going to be applied to anybody that's standing up for Black Lives Matter, anybody that's protesting, because this is in people's mind. It represents this thing that just seems
angry black.
Angry and
angst and
recklessness and all these things, lawlessness, I think would probably be like,
but I could go find, I mean, it wouldn't take us 20 seconds to find a bunch of images of a bunch of white supremacists doing the same stupid thing.
No, that's certainly true.
Difference is maybe they didn't act on it. I don't know. That argument is just flawed. Because you cannot hold up this one group of idiots as a representation of all the positive things that are over on the other side. You got neo-Nazis who get on social media and make YouTube videos that spout things that, to me, they really should be locked up for, that are hate crimes, okay? But they may not go into public and bring their weapons. Is this a gun issue? I mean, I mean, that's what I'm like. You can act a fool all you want on social media. That shouldn't make them like the poster children for the whole movement of people trying to fight against the wrongs that have taken place in the last few months.
Well, I think what makes it really hard to understand is that in this situation, it was violence. This was not a racially driven incident. Yeah, I don't even know the story. These are still suspects.
To me, yeah, sounds to me like a bunch of stupid kids did something stupid. And some people, unfortunately, which is horrible, that little boy got killed. What I'm saying is we should not let the powers that be hold that up as some kind of determining factor of this is really what we're dealing with, i.e. Black Lives Matter, anybody that's vocal on anti-racial issues, really at their core, they're thugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. There's something that happens, I think, in the suburban psyche that when something like an incident like this happens, an image is drawn about who that represents. And so therefore, then when protesters are in the streets and they're also wearing their pants low. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, no, I'm laughing because, I mean, you're exactly right.
That
it's just ludicrous.
That gets, but this kind of still goes back to the conversation of other, like anything that is other is not understood. And so there's not nuance to any of that stuff. And you said something earlier, and I want to, if we can transition to this, you're talking about your experience with this and how you viewed what you saw, and that there is, I don't want to speak for you, but can you say what you felt with it?
I mean, I'm almost 50, and there's definitely a generational component to the way I would like to combat racism and racial injustice. I'm probably a little bit more on the side of nonviolence, but not completely. You know, I'm like, you know, if you're going to fight and shoot us, we're probably going to fight and shoot back at you, okay? And there's a lot of older white people, I think, that they're like, why can't you be more like Martin Luther King and put on a suit and talk about Jesus? We hear that. I'm like, but y'all didn't hear it when it was going on 50 years ago, okay? These kids that are out here now, yeah, with their sagging pants and their music that older people like me aren't into, and their hair is different, and none of that, like you said, those are the things that, like you said, people who are not aware of other, like my mother, for one, she has a real problem with natural hair. You know what natural hair is?
Yeah.
Okay. And I've tried to explain to her, I'm like, what, that's the hair that they were born with, like, what's wrong with it? But she has these racist views of like what beauty is.
Mm-hmm.
And she's 83 years old. It's that's something that's ingrained in her. Is she ever going to not think that way? Probably not. So I guess just like people who've been around mostly white people like them in the suburbs their whole lives, when a group of people come in that they're not familiar with, those ideas and perceptions that they've had their whole lives about those people are just reinforced when those people act out in a way that is against the status quo, meaning we had our established way of life and this is the way you are supposed to act and behave in the mall, but you come in here and you act in a way that violates what we see as normal social decorum. Therefore, we're going to vilify you.
Well, the thing that's complicated is like, if other people were in the room, they would be really quick to say like, this was wrong. Like, this is something that
nobody's saying it's not wrong. What's wrong is that we automatically project onto people who are impoverished, people from lower economic status, people from, dare I say, you know, another race, and in my case, my own race, but they're not at the same economic place as I am. We project onto them all of the negative, bad things that we don't want to be a part of our space.
Mm-hmm.
you know, all the violence, all of the bad parenting, all of these things that, you know, they all get equated with being that, that meaning whatever comes from outside of our community. Mm-hmm. Nobody's saying it's not wrong, you know, but what happens is that the "we told you so" kicks in. Mm-hmm. And we know it. As Black people, we know it. We're embarrassed by it. We're totally embarrassed by it because we know exactly how white people are going to think about it. So it embarrasses us that these same people that I'm standing up for and trying to get equality for somehow bring the whole thing crashing down on us because of their thoughtless actions. Mm-hmm. But that's how we need to think about violence and things like that. We need to stop making it a component of, well, you see, that's just how people from that part of town act. No, I guarantee you that we can go find 20 people in an hour that are law-abiding, tax-paying, you know, good citizens in their community. It's just their community may be run down. Mm-hmm. And when you live in a place where you don't have many, I guess, many opportunities, a lack of opportunity may sometimes for a person whose back may be up against the wall or a person who feels they have no other opportunity but to go commit a violent act to be heard, those things happen. Mm-hmm. You know, and it doesn't lessen, it does not negate or lessen, because I can already hear like, but a little boy was killed, a little boy was killed. And yes, that needs to be dealt with. They need to be punished. But don't let us lose focus of what the greater issue is as far as trying to bridge the gap between the haves and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. and the races. You can't let these idiots derail the whole thing.
We continue to weave in and out of our belief system, but every single person has value.
Absolutely.
And if that's not true, then it opens the door for, like, you and I can't have a conversation because that opens the door for a hierarchy of where people fall. So mm-hmm. we don't treat everyone equally, but, and that's a product of our just
of humanity,
our,
I think.
Our humanity, yeah. And that we're flawed and mm-hmm. we're selfish. And this, I mean, I had like anxiety about talking about this stuff because there's so many different sides to it. But again, to the point, let's talk about it. Say something that potentially is going to be raw. But I can think of two incidents that I was with because of work. One recently, I just found out about this other one, that I was with people, Black men, young Black men who grew up in environments like we're talking about. They were, you know, they were poor and they it was an opportunity and so forth. One attempted murder. But this is someone that I know, like I've had real conversation with, that I've laughed with, that, and that was a real human being. Mm-hmm. that we were in the same space, that we were doing not the exact same thing but similar things. Another more recently, we talked about music. I listened to him rapping. I remember thinking, like, I would love to, like it'd be cool to, like, work with this guy. Mm-hmm. In jail for murder. I just found out.
Right now?
Yeah. And no one would dare say that the actions of those people are somehow justified in any way. But when you know someone who did that, and on a personal level, or you see and you experience a little bit, I can't fully understand that, where they come from, but when you know what the situation is, you can understand a little bit more of why the actions in a certain community or demographic look different than the actions of a place like where I live.
You should be. You should be able to. You're exactly right.
And I... See, I can hear people too being like, I can't believe you said that. I can't believe you would, you know, like in some way that's...
You defend murder.
That you would defend murder, that you would condone.
That's not what you're defending, though.
It's not. But what continues to happen, the hard part about this conversation is that no one wants to say that. And the only way to break out of this, in my opinion, the only way to break out of this labeling and just immediate stereotype of people who are involved in incidents like this, or something that's not that violent, just like robbery, taking stuff out of your cars, is to acknowledge that those people are actually people.
Yeah.
They live in community. And then when you start getting into to that much of a detail, then you have to look at what happened to put you in that situation. What has happened in our culture to put you in that situation and me in this situation? And that's where it does get back into that. It's just this weaving in and out of an institution that has given us very different experiences.
You're preaching to the choir. I'm with you. Are you familiar with quantum theory and parallel universes and multi-dimensional things of that nature?
I edit a physics podcast that is about the universe. So some stuff you should listen to. I don't understand what they're talking about.
Oh man, you probably understand more than you think. I bring that up only to say, what if in a parallel universe, these same people were raised in different environments? They were raised here in our community, and we were raised where they grew up. See, I firmly believe that anyone given the right set of tools can build, you know, a masterpiece. But when you don't equip people with the right tools and the right conditions, human nature dictates that they are going to react to their environment. And that's not to make an excuse. But if you don't teach a person that, hey, you don't have to be like this, you're better than this, you're greater, you are somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, that's what's really lacking in our Black leadership, is that when I was growing up, it was always drilled in me that you matter. Like mm-hmm. Jesse Jackson and James Brown and like all these other Black leaders are like, you are somebody. And I believed it. And I still, you know, I know that to be true. If you're not told that you matter and that you're somebody, then you feel like the heck with it. Devil may care. I'm going to go out here. What do the kids say? YOLO, you only live once. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a whole lot wrong with that, you know. But, you know, when you have that kind of mentality that you're just living, just going through the motions day to day, sure, you could either become a CEO or an inmate on death row. The same person has the same potential. I think that's what a lot of people on the right, for lack of a better term, are saying, that you're not a victim, you know, you have opportunities. No, they're exactly right in that sense, that people do have opportunities. But you know what? In order to even know that you have an opportunity, someone has to steer you and guide you.
Right.
And if you don't have any kind of positive role models around you in your environment, that's what I think is being lost or not translated to people who feel that these kind of people, these other people, I don't think they realize, like, okay, well, you know what? You may need to go mentor and try to hold up something that they can see that, hey, there's a different way and a different reality if you want it, you know? But we send our money overseas for missionary work when, like, their needs right here. You know, we as a nation will never be able to solve our problems unless we do work here at home first. We're out trying to police the world. We're out trying to feed the world, save the world. And in our own backyard, it's falling apart. To me, that's the problem with America. That's why there's two Americas, because we've neglected the fact that other America is really the same America that we live in. So, boys and girls, now it's time for a moment of levity to center us and get us back into some good feelings and vibes. So I have a question for my friend Corey.
Uh-huh.
In high school, what was your favorite music, or what did you lean towards listening to?
There's not a 90s country song that I didn't know.
Wow.
No, but hold on. At the same time, running equally parallel to that was rap.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to Tupac. I had Biggie. I had Dre. I mean, because that was like, that was kind of the prime time for that. And I love that as much as I love country. And then I saw it really was all over the place because.
So you listen to like any alternative music during that time?
Yes, because also Columbia House days.
Oh, that's right.
And I remember
$12 for $1
a little younger than high school. I remember
for a penny.
Yeah. One of the, this is literally what he said. He was telling everybody. He's like, hey, did you know that if you can go and sign up for Columbia House and you can get all these CDs and you can sign it and everything or whatever they made you do. And he's like, and then when they come for you, you can just be like, I'm a kid. I can't sign any contracts.
He was right.
And he was right.
He was right.
And so a lot of us got a whole lot of CDs and they could, what are they going to do? Come and take your CDs?
Right. They didn't, you know what? That wasn't costing them any money anyway.
Oh no. No, there's record the margins. Companies, yeah. But that's how I got, I mean, that's how I got really all the big albums from that era, mm-hmm. like 10.
Pearl and, Jam.
Yeah. Nevermind. Yeah. And then a lot, because you had so much room to kind of get more, like mm-hmm. you'd start kind of like drifting off into like Silverchair and to like Seven Mary
Three. Silverchair, no, not no Seven Mary Three, but Silverchair, yes.
That cumbersome was all right. Mm-hmm.
If you say so.
Yeah. It wasn't my favorite, but there was a lot in that category that I didn't take to as much. So one thing I liked about rap was, at least the rap that I was drawn to, was it was extremely poetic. Mm-hmm. And I always liked lyrics even back then. And country is the same way. I didn't realize this why I like country music until later, and I heard Lyle Lovett describe why he liked country music. And I was like, oh, that's why I attacked.
The stories?
It's a story. They're always a story, even if they're dumb stories. And back then, there was always like a twist or a turn. It was always like a wit to it.
Oh, to the story, you mean?
Yeah, yeah, and they really like pushed that too far. Mm-hmm. Like they started saying every little thing that had a double meaning, they exploited. Right?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's where I picked up a lot of, like, that's what I thought writing had to be. And then I went down that for a long time and really kind of, so I liked everything, man. I really did. I kept trying to think what I didn't like, but those were the three kind of main categories at the time. You're in a different era, man.
Well, yeah. In the 90s, I was already an adult and touring in bands and.
You were playing that music.
Yeah. I was like, yeah. Making records, literally. In high school, though, I was in high school in the 80s. So when I went to high school, 84, I was like, that's when Prince was like the biggest thing on the planet. And that's when I devoted my life to the Purple Altar and became a convert.
And we talked about Def Leppard.
Oh, and Def Leppard was,
But like that style of music, how did the 80s seem to you in hindsight? Was it like a really broad spectrum of new music?
I think it was probably one of the most creative and innovative decades of music, because it's kind of a crossroads. You had all this technology coming in with synthesizers and drum machines and that pushing that envelope, but also you had all these great like bands from the 70s that were kind of intermingling with this new thing.
They're kind of reinventing themselves.
Yeah, reinventing like Genesis and Yes. Yeah, like I didn't know Yes was an old band when Owner of a Lonely Heart came out. Mm. I just knew that was awesome. That's all I knew, and that's all I know to this day. It's one of the greatest songs ever. You know, it's also one of the first all digital recordings too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But yeah, in the 80s, it was kind of like Van Halen-esque metal, you know.
Yeah, I feel like in the 80s you had a lot more musicianship,
power metal, like yeah.
I mean, like Pearl Jam would be an exception, but like I feel like a lot of the alternative that we ended up with kind of became an imitation of something else.
No, the musicianship was still there in the 80s, sort of, but then maybe it wasn't, because then you had like punk bands that were, you know, like the Sex Pistols couldn't really play, but I didn't like the Sex Pistols when I was.
But that was more about emotion anyway.
Yeah, like I didn't
it,
like.
It was actually resistance to
I
that,
did like
right?
the Ramones, but I was more into the Sex Pistols probably after high school.
What is a Sex Pistol?
I don't know, but I had a button on my jacket. My little girl was like, take that off. So I do know what a Sex Pistol is, but we're not going to talk about it.
Oh, I'll have to look it up.
But I was really into Prince. That was my number one. Michael Jackson, of course, really kind of ended like R&B in general. Renee and Angela and SOS Band and Midnight Star, Atlantic Star. There were lots of star bands back then. Really into that kind of R&B. But I was also really into like The Cure, Depeche Mode. This is high school, so like Cure, Depeche Mode.
Depeche, I went because we made our theme.
Personal Jesus, yeah.
And I went back and listened to that song, and it's a
I love them.
It's a very, the way they laid it out is a very interesting song.
And they're musicians. I mean, they could play.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't just all algorithms and synths, and it takes a lot of talent to be able to put that stuff together. Yeah, New Order. Speaking of bands like that, but like The Cure, The Smiths, Depeche Mode, Fishbone.
I know some people that are listening right now that are just loving this right now. And this means very little to me, but I've heard those names before.
But then when I say Def Leppard, it like throws people for a loop because they're like, I'm like, no, but if you like Def Leppard was like a real kind of old school, kind of punky, kind of power pop, like, you know, rock band. I mean, from like 70s bands like Raspberries and stuff. I mean, I like power pop. I was in a power pop band.
Did you ever get into rap?
I don't like rap now. I like hip hop.
Whatever.
Yeah. Stop calling it rap. Is like, to me, rap is like Snow, who I just found out about last week.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Yes. What's the other guy? Vanilla Ice.
MC Hammer. I just say rap because I almost said gangster rap because it was back then. It was like an East Coast, West Coast. Yeah. It was a blue.
I guess it was rap back then.
What's your distinction then in the hip hop?
Hip hop to me is more of an art form. It's more about the culture. You know, it's not just like the actual song. Hip hop has to do with the whole like lifestyle of like.
Well, that's what I'm talking about then. So you got into that?
Yeah.
I mean, that would have been more of the genesis of that.
Yeah, like I was more into rap. Yeah, I was like, that was like eighth grade for me. Eighth grade. I remember being on the bus in eighth grade and like doing like Walk This Way and you know.
Well, you probably still like that because it was
Aerosmith. Well, of course. I like that. But
you never got into like the
I mean, I liked NWA and stuff. Stuff was
you
going.
Did?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I loved NWA.
I was listening to that.
I
love
Eazy-E was my jam.
I still get Eazy-E songs. Yeah. I was talking about that with somebody the other day. It's like this like warning to your kids, like careful what you listen to because you will just be sitting there.
Right.
And you will just have the most awful thing because I mean, he crafted some songs that were catchy.
But I mean, you know, it was exotic. Because like I didn't live that life. Anything they talked about in their songs was like basically like fantasy and wizards and swordplay to me. Because I'm like, none of that seemed real to me. Guns and gangsters and the police and none of that was like, wow, it's like another world out there. So, but yeah, I would listen to that stuff because I mean, you know, I mean that's what my boys are listening to. And we would hang out. I started getting more off into like more kind of I guess like Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul, remember them? That was about it for me for hip hop. I mean, I'm not going. I don't know. Arrested Development, they were up there, but I think
Arrested Development was way ahead of their.
That's getting into like college for me.
Yeah.
So I was in college when you were in high school. So yeah.
I listened to Arrested Development the other day and was like, wow.
No, they were great.
They were some profound stuff.
Did you listen to Diggable Planets? Remember them? They were kind of like Arrested Development.
No, I don't think so.
Maybe a little bit more preachy.
Okay.
But the one I have is called the CD, Blowout Comb.
Blowout Comb?
Yeah, you know what a blowout comb is?
Yeah. Can I guess?
Yeah.
So it has something to do with like a styling?
Mm-hmm.
Like picking your hair out?
Yeah. So like that's when you want your hair to get like a huge afro.
I didn't
want
to say some of those things just now, but that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, no, it has to do with making it get a huge afro and you get like a hair dryer and you make it blowout comb. They call it a blowout.
I should show you
hair dryer.
I had an afro for a little while.
Yeah,
you can't tell my hair is short now, but we call that an Isro. And what does that mean?
Because it's curly.
Uh huh.
You know, it's like an Israeli afro or a Jufro.
You can't.
That's not racist. An Isro. That's what it's an Isro.
Isro. An is.
I got some friends that have like some really tight, kinky, curly hair for white guys. I'm like, y'all need to check up on that.
You need to talk to a
family tree doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or not. Or just stay away from it.
Or just be quiet.
Because you'd probably be really disappointed.
Yeah.
All right. That's a good place to end it, man. Thanks as usual for the conversation.
You,
love you too, man.
All right.
Two Americas is a production of I Can't Believe We're Having to Talk About This. For future episodes, please subscribe.